Thanks for checking out this past Sunday's teaching. Every Tuesday, we'll release audio from the previous Sunday's message. If you want to hear the Vertical staff talk more about what these teachings mean for everyday life, a roundtable discussion releases every Wednesday. Thanks for listening.
Well, what a strong start we experienced to our new series last week with Austin launching us into a series we're calling Consider the Raven, a series that is completely talking about fear over 4 weeks. And what a timely topic this is when we're living in a culture that's surrounded by fear, where fear has been monetized and is actually controlling many of us. I want to take some time to go back to some things that he taught last week because I think they are so essential. And honestly, they were so personal for me. Austin asked a big question of all of us last week, and here it is. How many spears has fear caused you to throw over this quarantine season? Such vivid imagery in this particular day in the life of Saul, the character that we're studying through this series, sitting at home having choosing the wrong battle, to choose the wrong battle to fight, not going to war, but being at home with his grip tightening on that spear until he just couldn't take it anymore and eventually decided to throw it in an attempt to commit murder. Now, I haven't taken it quite that far, but I can tell you over the past number of weeks, I've had my moments, have you, where fear has overtaken me. I've chosen to fight the wrong battle. I've been at home fighting the wrong battle internally, opening myself up to things that actually have their origination point in evil and have affected how I feel and how I'm thinking. Now, I have a fear-based personality. I'm an Enneagram type 6, and if I don't manage that fear pretty closely, then it can take me to some dark places. I want to convince you through some things that we share together today that fear is often a terrible and crafty motivator, and we need to pay attention to it way more than we actually are. And just to jump right into the topic today, I want to share with you something that causes my fear to go from 0 to 100 almost instantly. I feel like as soon as I share this, there'll be many who are watching that are in this same camp. Here's the thing that triggers my fear perhaps the most. When God does not do what I expect him to do. Now, many of us, we have expectations on God. And what I find so interesting is people who aren't even following God, who aren't following Jesus, and maybe don't even really believe in the idea of God, when things in their life go away that they wish that they wouldn't, they eventually end up blaming God. The people who are far from God, they'll express it in just overt anger or cynicism towards the idea of God. Those of us who are following God, we feel like that's a little bit too disrespectful, so we back up and it translates into fear. I want to share with you just right out of the gate a particular passage out of the Old Testament, the first half of the Bible, that addresses this very directly. It's so encouraging for me to be able to share this with you because it's rooted in the honesty of God. I love the fact that I can be before you today talking about how honest and caring God is, because the truth is he knows the arrangement between us and he's decided to be honest about that. The truth is we're not equal with God, and there are many times based on our relationship that God will not do things that we expect him to do. Here's the passage. It's in Isaiah chapter 55, such a critical book inside of the Old Testament. You'll see through me reading these words that God cares about us enough to be honest with us. It starts this way. My thoughts, this is the voice of God here. My thoughts are nothing like your thoughts, says God. And my ways are far beyond anything that you could imagine. Notice the scale, the scope there. The Bible does that very often. For just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways. And not only my ways, God says, but also my thoughts are higher than your thoughts. Now, what God is doing here in the book of Isaiah in the Old Testament is saying something very foundational that I think so many of us should slow down and begin to believe, if not for the first time, maybe again, that we aren't God, that God is above us, that God is different than us, and he has more ability than we do. Here's a way for you to remember it. What God is explaining here is the holy hierarchy. If you were to think about the universe as an org chart, God is definitely above us on the org chart. And this fact should bring us comfort. This is why he's so much better at making decisions than we are, not only because he can see the future, but he can see inside of our heart. He knows how to be the architect of our lives, and he has better information than we do about how that should run. Even still, when my life goes in a way that I didn't expect it to go, and especially when God's activity in my life, or lack thereof, upsets my expectations, man, I bristle. Why do we bristle? I think it's because, especially as modern people, we've been indoctrinated to this main idea that equality, pay attention to this closely, equality is the highest goal. Now, as we hear that statement, so many of us would believe it. Yes, equality is a lofty goal. And in fact, in our current cultural climate, the discussions around equality have been fantastic. And the advances that we have made, even in just the past few weeks, especially in the state of Mississippi, have been awesome. But we have been taught that equality in all things is the highest goal. I want to propose to you today that that just simply is not true. Equality among people, person to person, should be a lofty and one of our highest goals, absolutely. But equality between God and man is not something we should be pursuing. God is above us. God is above the fray. God isn't broken like we are. And this is a fact that should bring us such comfort, because something that isn't broken in the same way that we are has the ability to fix our brokenness. And this is a perfect description of God. God is going to operate outside of our expectations often. And when he does that, we should actually be thankful, because it means he is operating with a higher skill set and more information than we could ever achieve. The teaching that we're going to roll through today, the whole goal of this is to address a particular fear. But I want to start by laying this foundation that all fear is not from God. God does not operate by covering us in fear, quite the opposite. And God explains this very honestly in Isaiah chapter 55. My ways are not your ways, my thoughts are not your thoughts. But this idea of fear, it unifies all of us. There's not a person who has ever lived that's been able to escape this emotion. So if that's true, we must learn how to navigate it well and how to allow it to take us to God instead of away from God. As people, though, when we experience this emotion, fear, we often have very predictable reactions to that fear, especially if it's a fear rooted in God not meeting our expectations. I want to describe briefly just three of these before we get into our main content for the morning around the idea and the life of Saul, a particular fascinating day in this man's life. The first reaction that we often have, and I want you to think through these as I'm describing them, where do you fit on these reactions? The first one is animosity. So many of us develop animosity towards God when God doesn't do the things that we feel like we need God to do in order to provide a good life for us. Animosity is tricky. It's like strong resentment. But the difference from overt resentment and animosity is this: we tend to hide animosity. We don't show it very openly. And if it does show in our behavior, it tends to show in this way: extremely passive aggressive behavior. Such a dangerous reaction to our expectations not being met to build animosity towards God, because I would propose to you today that if you have animosity towards God, it won't be long before you have extreme animosity towards the people around you. How do I see this working out most often? In social media, quite frankly. I read posts and I know enough information about people's lives to understand what they're saying without saying it. Can I caution you, if you're a part of the vertical community and you're making commentary on your own life, to not carefully craft a social media post to say things without saying those things? That's extremely passive aggressive behavior. You're hoping that people will read between the lines, and when they do, most often they will respect you less for taking that step. Secondly, where I see it most often in relationships face to face is in, unfortunately, the rampant nature of divorce inside of our community. As I see couples split, I see this one thing happen almost instantly. It has a term, it's called triangulation. What happens is the people who are angry with each other don't want to be aggressive towards each other, so they choose the passive aggressive way, and they pull in a friend, or most tragically, a child. Let me encourage you, especially if your expectations haven't been met and you're afraid, not to work that out on other people. Those relationships, friends, and especially children are already paying a high price for the destruction of your relationship. Please do not force them to pay an additional tax on that relationship. Realize that because of your fear, animosity is building and it's damaging the people around you. The second is a little more straightforward, and we'll all understand this one. It's disappointment. Now, disappointment falls on two sides, either legitimate disappointment or illegitimate disappointment. Let's talk about the first one and maybe offer some freedom there. Sometimes good people do dumb things that let you down. Let me say that again. Sometimes good people will do dumb things that will let you down and disappoint you. I believe this would be such a strong weapon for us relationally inside of Vertical Church if we could just put this in our back pocket and realize that when that happens, sometimes it happens. Well-meaning people do things to disappoint us. We all make mistakes. It allows us to offer and extend grace in those particular times. Sometimes, though, we have illegitimate disappointment. This happens, as we've already discussed, because our expectations were either too high or in the wrong place. Sometimes people let us down, and they're letting us down because our expectations were just simply too high. And I've saved the most potent and dangerous for last, so tune in if you checked out. The last response that we have to our expectations not being met is rejection. And that word is so strong, even saying it, you can feel the temperature change in this teaching right now. Rejection works out in a very straightforward formula, and I'm saying it this way because I want you to be able to jot this down and remember it and think about it as you progress throughout your week and you think about the relationships in your life and maybe even your relationship with God by the time this teaching is finished. It has three phases. The first, when we experience rejection, the first thing that we have inside of us is shock. It's almost like a gut punch or a punch to the mouth. We're just disoriented in our life. The pain is so great and the feeling is something we so much don't want that we go into shock. After that, we move into the phase of shudder, shock and then shudder. Shudder is shock with a little bit of fear mixed in. We don't want to have that experience of being rejected. And I'm especially speaking to men right now. We don't want to have that experience of being rejected again. So we say things like, well, that was in the past. Or, I don't want to think about that. What we're really saying, especially as men, when we get to this shudder phase of rejection is, I pray to God I never have to have that feeling again. The last one, and many of you know where this is headed because you're there right now. The last one is the shutdown. The shock, the shudder, and the shutdown. The shutdown is characterized by two words, and I hear them often, especially in our community. I'm out. Have you ever said that? I'm out relationally. I'm out with God. That's the shutdown. It takes on many different forms, but this last one is so strong and so powerful. We can't just make it part of an equation, and I can't just give it a sentence. If this lesson is going to stick for us today, then it has to take the shape of a story. This feeling is so universal. It has no regard for your social status, for your net worth, or for your age. So many of us have had this experience of shutting down because of our fear of rejection from other people, our fear of rejection from God. Our goal today is for the lesson to stick, and the lesson is going to come from the life of Saul. One thing I want to point out for you today before we get into this particular day, fascinating for me, and I have to bring it up for all of us in the Vertical community. I first talked about this story the first Sunday of this year of 2020 in our series called The Dip. I told this very story. Little did we know what we were going to face when we started this year with a series called The Dip. Little did we know when I shared things like this on that first Sunday. Sometimes, even though the activity of God isn't evident to us, it is present to us. Maybe we can't see it, but God is there. I said phrases like this: sometimes we must know in the dip that God is up to something. Those are such big phrases. The last one, particularly important for us through this really, really difficult phase that we've gone through as a people. Sometimes there are lessons that we can only learn from God in difficulty. Can you believe that God was doing this for Vertical Church at the beginning of the year? I think it only highlights for us that God is so caring, that He's a guide, that God will take people to water even before they realize they are thirsty. I believe God has done that exactly for Vertical Church. I believe He's willing to do that for everyone. And I'm so thankful that God has actually shifted our church into this mindset at the beginning of the year. Very telling that most of us probably don't remember much from the series that happened at the beginning of the year in January. That's why I'm bringing it up now. And we're going to rediscuss this story in a different light. It's a day in the life of Saul that was difficult. It's a day where he considered the raven, but in an Edgar Allan Poe kind of way, not in a Luke chapter 12 kind of way. Saul became afraid. He was afraid of being rejected, and he went through the three phases. I'll give you briefly just a backstory here. The people of Saul had picked a fight with their largest enemy. And these were some of the most powerful people that surrounded the people of God. They were coastal people. They had great wealth and they knew how to fight. And Saul's people picked a fight with them. And as a result, they mobilized and they came against Saul and against his people. Upon seeing this, Saul enters into the first phase and it's shock. Man, have I been there. Having an act of aggression, thinking that I'm handling something to try to compensate for my fear, and then the results of that action are even worse than the thing I was afraid of in the first place. I love how the Bible describes this, so descriptive. It says that the people that came against Saul and his army were so numerous they were as the sand on the beach. There were thousands and thousands of them. This was an odds are stacked against us kind of moment. Taking it in, Saul believed, as he should have, without God, there's no way that I can win this battle. Saul was in shock. What happens next? Saul moves in to the shutter. This happens because the people around him were also in shock, and they began to retreat. The very army that was supposed to take on the enemies of God, the enemies of Saul, began to leave because of their fear. The Bible says that they even ran across borders. They were hiding in holes in the ground, in aqueducts. They were hiding in caves in an attempt to save their own life. Saul, as the leader, knows that he has to fight this battle that without God, he's not going to win. And now he doesn't even have an army. The very few that remain with him, the Bible says, stayed, but they were physically shaking. The word the Bible uses in the story is trembling. Think about this moment for this leader, Saul. His army has left, most of them, and the few that were loyal enough to him to stay were physically trembling because they were afraid. Saul then becomes afraid himself, and he moves into the final phase of the shutdown. Now, this doesn't only happen to people who are in charge, but we're talking about Saul, who is in charge of the army today. This shutdown happens in many different ways for us. For Saul, he shut down by taking action. Let me describe how that happened. Saul had received instructions from the man of God of the time. He said, you need to wait for me. Notice these instructions. It's a man named Samuel talking to Saul. You need to wait for me for 7 days. After that 7-day period, we will participate in a religious ritual. We will ask for God's help, and then we will fight this army. And Saul decides to do that very thing. Even with the army retreating and gone, even with the people close to him trembling, he's entering into the shutdown phase, but he's committed for the 7 days to do exactly what the man of God asked him to do. And here's the turn. Saul waits those 7 days, and the man of God doesn't show. I can identify with that, can't you? Many of us, we've had our 7-day increments where we're waiting on God to do something spectacular, even necessary in our stories, and it doesn't happen. And the question for us in this season as Vertical Church is, what do we do with day 8? Maybe right now you're in a day 8, and the story is exactly for you. Saul decides to participate in the shutdown by taking one final action. And this especially happens to those who lead either organizations, businesses, even families. They decide to take one final action, and that one final action is an action that Saul regretted. He decides that he's going to participate in the ritual by himself without the man of God. And that one decision, hear me on this, Vertical Church, that one decision that day cost him everything. So let's pause here in this history lesson and let's ask a very pertinent question for all of us. How many of us, if we could turn back the clock, maybe just on a 24-hour period in our lives, and not make a decision, a rash decision, based on fear? That's an honest question, isn't it? It brings up an actually honest point that I want to make to my community because I care about you so deeply. I don't want to see you make decisions out of fear of rejection, just like Saul did that day. Here's a phrase I want you to hang on to. We will willingly choose regret over rejection. We will willingly choose regret over rejection. That's just how much we're afraid of this experience. I want to be very honest with you and tell you today that regret will hang around a lot longer than rejection. But we're so afraid of that feeling that we will choose regret, some of us for a lifetime. Now, we're going to talk about some solutions today. I don't think I'm going to leave you in this low place, but I just want to very clearly describe what this fear does to us as people. It costs us more than we're willing to pay. So let's do the difficult work now, and let's think about this as individuals, not as a community. There are plenty of circumstances that will cause us to shut down. Let me give you a few examples. When the spouse dresses us down publicly, disrespects us or says unkind things to us, no matter the gender. How about when the second date never happens? That's a difficult one, isn't it? How about when you're passed over for a promotion in a job that you've been working at for years? That's a difficult pill to swallow. Yeah, it's a pill called rejection. The last one I see a lot these days, when the social media post doesn't gain the traction that we really hoped that it would. These feelings of rejection, they're real. But what I'm trying to communicate to you today as your pastor is they should not scare us as much as they do. I believe that the enemy uses these feelings to pull us away from God. Today, we're going to take that back, and we're going to actually use these feelings to draw us closer into a relationship with God. Mentioning these things today, they're actually very difficult to say publicly because I don't want you to go to a bad place listening to this teaching, but hear me on this. We have to think about these things, at least enough to allow God to work inside of them. Or else if we ignore them, we're ignoring God's ability. Remember, He's greater than we are, He has more power than we do, and He's able to resolve the issues in our life much more effectively than we can. But we must be willing to sit with Him in them. We've spent quite a lot of time today describing the problem, but we're about to describe the solution, so I want you to really tune in. It comes straight from the sacred text of Christianity, the Bible, as most effective solutions in our life do. It's in a book called Nahum 1:7. Even those of us who have been following Jesus for quite a while will not really recognize that book of the Bible. Search for it, look it up. I'll be reading from the NLT. The Lord is good and a strong refuge when trouble comes. He is close to those who trust in Him. Let me read that again because I believe there's particular power in these verses. The Lord is good and a strong refuge when trouble comes. He is close to those who trust in Him. In a time in our world where we've decided to monetize fear, it's leveraged as the commodity over our lives, especially by the media and especially by politicians. Fear is being used to gain money and power in our world today, and I want you to be aware of that. People are leveraging fear and the power that can have over us to gain money and to gain power in our world, and it's time that we stop falling for it. Regardless of how you feel about the numbers, regardless of how you feel about who should be in office, I want you to start taking control over your own life by depending on God more and not falling for these tactics. And as a man of God, let me say with strong accountability, if you are a member of one of these groups, the media or politicians, and you are leveraging fear over the children of God, the children that He loves so much, my prayer for you is that the kingdoms that you build will turn to dust, and that men and women who are actually following God will eventually replace you. I believe that people using fear over God's children is something that breaks the heart of God. And it's my hope that that tide will begin to shift. But until it does, the people of God need to be trusting God more. Even in days like today, God is the same as He has always been. He is good and He is strong and He is close. This is the big lesson for all of us today in the second week of this series, Consider the Raven. God is who He has always been. So let's drive this lesson home today by asking a big question. Are you hiding or Are you seeking? There's such a big difference. The people around Saul, they were hiding. Even Saul in his religious ritual was hiding. There's such a big difference between hiding out of fear. Excuse me. Such a big difference between hiding out of fear and seeking the refuge of the Father. This is what I'm calling us all to today. I don't want us as a group of people hiding out of fear. I want us seeking the refuge of God. He's trustworthy and he's stronger than we are and he's more capable than we are. I want to leave you with this today. It's out of Psalm 46. Psalm is a book in the middle of the Bible that just basically addresses the range of human emotion. We've been quoting it often around Vertical Church lately for a reason, because we're living in such emotional times. Thinking about this in light of everything that we said today inside of Consider the Raven, Psalm 46 verses 1 through 3 say this: God is our refuge and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. So, as a result of that fact, we will not fear when the earth quakes and the mountains crumble into the sea. Let the oceans roar and foam. Let the mountains tremble and the waters surge. Do you hear the confidence in that language? This was written by a person that understood very clearly the ability of God, even to overcome the fear of rejection. Even if nature begins to reject us, some of us feel that that's happening right now. Maybe you're in that trap. I want to encourage you today with these final statements. Listen, we don't control life or death. We don't control when the mountains crumble, and we certainly can't control what happens with the anger of the sea. But what we can control, Vertical Church, is being in relationship with the very God that made us and cares for us so deeply, whose ways are not our ways. This should be the place where we should gain great comfort, not bristle or fight against, but gain great comfort in the days ahead, no matter what happens, no matter what the numbers tell us daily on the news, no matter who gets in office in November, we can trust that God is in control. Even in the dips, Vertical Church, God is up to something. So this week, my challenge for you as your pastor is to begin to develop this relationship and develop this trust with a God who loves us so much that he can overcome our fear of rejection with his love for us. Let's pray together. God, I am literally excited at the ways that you're moving inside of Vertical Church, the things that you're doing for each of us, the stories that I'm hearing of people overcoming fear and anxiety, even after 1 week of us calling it out inside of this church. I thank you for your activity and for your movement. God, I pray that you would expand your rule over our nation. What do I mean by that? I pray that you would move actively in the people who are searching and seeking for power, that you would rescue our nation by rescuing their hearts. God, for those of us that are trying to follow you through a time of extreme fear, those of us who have experienced rejection in the past, either from parents or spouse or those in authority, I ask that you heal those wounds supernaturally with your care, your ways that are above our ways, that you would help us overcome our fear by being the physician over those wounds. And God, we announce even today that in our future, we trust you. We trust your goodness. In Jesus' name, amen.